Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Monday, March 2nd. I'm Faith Miller. Skid Row is reeling after an officer-involved shooting killed a homeless man yesterday.
I heard the shot. Wow. So I'm right there on the other side of this tree. I dove behind the tree, and as I'm laying down, I heard three more shots. Pow, pow, pow.
That's Dice. He lives on Skid Row, and he says the man who was shot, nicknamed Africa, was laying down when the police shot him. Ciola Waddell says he was there when the shooting happened, too. He says the police came up and shook Africa's tent. The man came out and started arguing with police.
So that's when they tased him.
Yeah.
And then when they all five of them tried to tussle with him, man, and take him down, he wouldn't go down, man. So they backed up off of him, man, and just shot him. And he was down on the ground when they shot him. He was not standing up anymore. They tussled him down to the ground.
Mayor Eric Garcetti and LAPD Chief Charlie Beck held news conferences today to talk about the incident. Los Angeles police officers were involved in the fatal shooting of a homeless man yesterday in Skid Row. Ben Krause has more on the story.
Officers were responding to a 911 call when they tried to subdue the homeless man. A video of the incident posted to Facebook showed at least some type of struggle before shots were fired, resulting in the man's death. Despite video from civilians and police body cameras, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti noted that the case is far from being solved.
Nobody should depend on cameras by themselves telling the truth. They have one angle and one perspective at one moment in time that can be extremely helpful. I think in this case, it will be helpful, but they by themselves are not the investigation. You need human beings to do that.
Police Chief Charlie Beck also commented on the incident, but wouldn't say whether or not he believed the officers acted properly.
And it would be inappropriate for me to go that far and to make a statement about the propriety of this incident until I have seen all the evidence. And I ask the public to do the same thing.
However, Beck confirmed today that the man forcibly grabbed at one of the officer's guns. Lewis Walker is a friend of the victim and also weighed in on what happened.
I don't know why this man was fighting with the police. He would not fight anybody unless he felt like he had to protect himself.
An investigation into the incident conducted by the Inspector General and District Attorney's Office will be presented to the Board of Police Commissioners at its conclusion. Ben Krause, Annenberg Radio News.
With LA City Council elections around the corner, City Council has been looking for ways to improve the dismal voter turnout in recent years. A new proposal has found its way onto this year's ballot. Martha Daniel has more.
Tomorrow, many LA residents will cast their votes for city election, but most won't. To get more voters to the polls, the City Council has put a measure on tomorrow's ballot that would move city elections to even-numbered years that coincide with state and national elections, which tend to draw more voters. Hans Johnson, a spokesman for Save Our City Elections, opposes the measure.
LA voters stand to lose our ability to have standalone elections where we can actually have a meaningful voice over our local offices.
Dan Schnurr, a USC professor and government reform expert, says, despite the drawbacks, the change would draw in even those who normally shun local elections.
Because most citizens don't pay nearly as much attention to local politics as the presidential campaigns, we believe that holding those elections on the same ballot is going to dramatically increase voter turnout and get voters and get citizens to pay much more attention to issues going on in their own community.
Most city council candidates say the change would make races more expensive and give incumbents an advantage. Martha Daniel, Annenberg Radio News.
Former rap star Marion Suge Knight was hospitalized again today after complaining to a judge that he was nearly blind. This was Knight's third trip to the hospital since he was charged with murder, hit and run, and robbery. At a hearing to transfer his case to downtown L.A., Knight fired his attorneys during a heated exchange with the judge. Knight is next scheduled to appear in court March 9th. A NASA spacecraft is approaching the Texas-sized dwarf planet Ceres. Ceres is the biggest piece of debris along the asteroid belt. For the first time, scientists using the Dawn spacecraft will see the rock up close. Head researcher for the Dawn mission, Carol Raymond, talked about the data NASA hopes to collect.
Over the course of 16 months, Dawn will collect comprehensive data sets on Ceres, revealing its shape, surface features, the mineralogy and elemental composition, whether the surface is active today, and how Ceres formed. So we can understand what role building blocks like Ceres had in forming our planetary neighborhood.
Spacecraft Dawn is scheduled to enter Ceres' orbit on Friday. Russian authorities are still looking for the person who shot and killed Boris Nemtsov, an outspoken critic of President Vladimir Putin. Nemtsov was shot in public in central Moscow on Friday. The Russian opposition leader was walking home from dinner with his girlfriend when he was shot dead from over 300 feet away. Though Putin vowed to look for Nemtsov's killer, Thomas Seyfried, a professor of Slavic languages at USC, says he wouldn't look away from the Russian president himself.
Putin admires Stalin. And he may have learned a lesson from him about how to silence the opposition, as you kill one of them. I'm not saying I know that Putin did it. The evidence certainly points that direction.
On Sunday, tens of thousands of people marched throughout Moscow to mourn Nemtsov. The California Republican Party voted to formally recognize a gay GOP group yesterday. The Log Cabin Republicans are the first gay group to be officially sanctioned by a state Republican party. This organization was singled out for their commitment to volunteer work for various campaigns across the state. The state GOP's official platform still says homosexuality is unacceptable, but the historic vote may help the party attract more voters in the largely Democratic state. The decision comes just months before the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling on the ban on same-sex marriage. The Hot Seat's Max Schwartz has some thoughts to keep in mind for tomorrow's municipal primary elections.
Hi, everybody. I'm here to tell you what you need to look out for in tomorrow's general election. Looking at CD14, I expect the race to be between former Los Angeles County Supervisor Gloria Molina and current City Councilman Jose Huizar. It could come down to the wire, but it would not surprise me if Molina comes out with a large victory. Moving over to CD4, where there is a field of 14 candidates, I expect 5 to be serious. They are Carolyn Ramsey, John Pellico, Teddy Davis, Steve Verez, and Sheila Irani. Two of them will advance to the primary because I don't think anyone will win outright in a field of 14. As for CD10, I think incumbent Herb Wesson will come out with the victory. However, Grace Wu could have a chance depending on how many people go to the polls. Remember to vote tomorrow between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. Max Schwartz, Annenberg Radio News.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Jacob Kramer with today's Root Source.
Well, howdy, Southern California. Locals here embrace the sunny skies and the sandy beaches that the beautiful West Coast has to offer. But if we travel a little bit more south, we'll come into contact with an entire culture that embraces, well, you guessed it, the word howdy. First recorded in Southern dialects in the 1840s, the informal greeting is a shortened form of the phrase, how do you do? But aside from its historical context, the phrase itself is blended into all circles of life in the South.
Howdy, neighbor.
Happy harvest.
So, is it a question? A rhetorical question? An exclamation? Nobody really seems to know. And howdy continues to break every rule of the English language.
From Gloria Steinem to Beyoncé's declaration, "I'm not bossy, I'm the boss." Over the years, feminism and its media portrayal has changed. Leah Harari talked to the editors of women's rights publication Miss Magazine to ask them about some of the hot-button issues feminism and its main proponents tackle today.
Feminism is how you treat each other.
That is a very hard question to answer. I do love bell hooks' definition of a movement to end oppression.
I mean, I, you know, hate to just take off of, you know, Beyoncé feminism, but like, just basically what she quoted in her Flawless song, when she quotes Chimamanda, just feminism is the belief in the economic, social, and political equality of the sexes.
I'd say that the biggest issue is reproductive rights, because if you can't control your own body, you're not a free person.
Reproductive justice, and not just in terms of abortion rights or access to birth control or family planning, but just like the freedom of all women to be able to raise their children in a safe society.
Having sexual assault on campus and sexual assault period taken seriously as a crime, and especially as a gendered crime, and not, you know, having it
be treated so laissez-faire in the culture, I think would do a lot to advance women.
It's great to work for a magazine that you can support what they're doing and not be working for, I don't know, Cat Fancy or Bird Fancy magazine.
When I was 16, I sort of realized that I wanted to work for Ms. That was the thing I wanted to do. I was interested in women's rights. I was interested in journalism. I was interested in writing.
I don't know, just my entire life, I kind of felt like this kind of unnamed oppression that I couldn't really identify. And I just, when I started interning here, I kind of just realized that a huge part of that was just sexism and being thought inferior because I was a woman. I saw all the things that Ms. was doing in their writing to reverse that, and it inspired me and it turned me into a feminist.
From Gloria Steinem to Beyond. Oh, that piece was produced by Leah Harari. One rookie table tennis player is making a name for himself on social media. Reporter Megan Coyle spoke to Kevin Korb during his USC ping pong posse practice.
This is what Kevin Korb hears 30 hours a week. Squeaky sneakers and the sound of a ping pong ball bouncing across the tennis table. Ping pong has pretty much taken over his life since he started playing less than 2 years ago. He goes to table tennis tournaments. He's president of the USC ping pong posse. Oh, and he's Instagram famous.
I hit the popular page on Instagram a couple times, and since then my follower count has increased to almost 18,000 people on Instagram, making me the largest table tennis related Instagram account by more than 10 or 11,000 people.
That fame doesn't just come from his tournament trophies. Korb's personality and unique playing style stand out in the sport.
I mean, I'm the tall, lanky white guy who doesn't seem to fit in with table tennis. I wear flashy outfits. I've got this, the bright orange. I've got neon shorts that I usually wear, and I'll go out to places and play trick shots that people normally wouldn't hit, which catches people off guard.
Korb started playing table tennis as a hobby his freshman year and learned from his teammates like Grant Lee, who was on the U.S. national team in 2012. Korb has no formal coaching, yet as an unranked freshman, shot up to an 1870 rating out of 2400 in his first year. And he had a stunning performance at last year's Nationals.
But still, I was playing the other team's number two player. And went down, lost the first two games in a best out of five match, and then proceeded to lob them down to win the next three and come back, hitting the ball super high into the air and letting them smash it and kind of doing it until they would miss.
Korb's most recent accomplishment was a big upset of the number two seed in a tournament. Now his rating is over 2,000, putting him in the top 2,400 players in the country.
I'm getting invited over to successful businessmen's houses to go play ping pong with them, kind of entertain, going to represent different brands at tournaments.
These opportunities are rare for tennis table players, especially in the U.S. Table tennis gets little TV time in the States, and no American athlete has ever won an Olympic medal in the event. In fact, there are no Americans in the top 200 players in the world. On the other hand, countries like China groom table tennis players from a young age, and it's one of the most watched sports in the country. Korb can't compete with players like that.
It's hard. In the U.S., there's not as big of a market, especially having started only a year and a half ago, as opposed to people who've been playing for years and years and years. I realistically don't have a good shot of making it as a professional player.
Korb may not be headed to the Olympics, but his future in the sport will most likely involve the business partnerships and social media interaction he does now.
Appearances as a sort of celebrity or maybe building it into a TV show of sorts, and we'll see where that takes me.
Until that reality TV show, Korb will first have to learn how to deal with that element of ping pong that does not fit his personality.
It's interesting, because ping pong's a sport that's very, very robotic at times. So I can have a harder time in longer rallies making consistent attacks and consistent blocks, which is now what I'm starting to try to work on more and more to help get my game to the next level.
Luckily, he's got 17,000 Instagram followers to cheer him on.
That's it for this Monday. From all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Faith Miller.